With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on? This is what we do every Friday from 7 to 9. Hey, y'all, I got a good show for y'all today. Today, we are going to be talking about the state of our young black men. And I brought three of the most powerful black men on this show today. I have my man Greg V. Arnold. He was the finalist of 2009 National Best Book called Help. I got Omar Tyree, best-selling author. I got my man Abdul Johnson, the president of the National Movement to Save Black Boys. And we got this panel together right now. My man Greg V. Arnold is on right now with us. Omar Tyree is going to be coming on. Mr. Abdul Johnson is going to be coming on. And we're going to talk about our young black men and try to save them. Because it's a serious problem going on right now, everybody, with our young black men. I think this might be higher on this OD.
Peace and blessings, brother Umar Johnson.
We got my man Umar Johnson has chimed in. Umar Johnson. We got my man Greg V. Arnold on. Right now, he's one of the panelists. Omar Tyree will be coming on in a minute. Like I was discussing with Greg and my listeners, I have brought three of the most powerful men to talk about our young black men right now. Because it's a serious problem going on. People don't want to open up their eyes or people want to slant to the back and they don't want to realize what's going on. But here's the problem that I see. The men are not stepping up. So now I'm bringing these men together and we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about the solutions. We're going to talk about the problems. We're going to hit the nail in the coffin and see can we help our young black men. So I'd like to thank you both right now from coming on. It's a blessing and it's an honor to have y'all on the show right now.
Thank you for having me, brother. It's my pleasure.
Yes,
also,
yes.
Also, sir, I appreciate the blessing.
Yes. Well, Omar is going to be charming in hopefully probably in the next 5 or 10 minutes. But I want to talk about some serious issues. And one of the issues that I really want to address on is our community. And when I say our community, I'm talking about the men in the community, how we are not stepping up to the plate and put a stronghold on our kids, especially the boys, because these are our future doctors. And not taking away from the female, make no mistake, OT is not taking nothing away from the female, because y'all are significant in the struggle too. But I'm going to focus right now on my black men. And the focus is that my young black men, we are having problems, period, point blank, with the crime level, with these kids have kids, with the educational level, with the men not stepping up into the lives of our kids. And I see it's going down the wrong path, which it shouldn't be. So I'm going to address you, Greg, right now. What can we do as men, strong men in the community, to help our young men out?
The first thing we need to do is address our values and morals. The man has a certain position in the household, and everyone in that household has to accept that position. The way things are going right now, a lot of strong men, and a lot of men in particular, only have certain type of jobs. And the female in the relationship has the better job or brings more of the money into the household, because the way things are set up right now. Now, if she still can't respect that man as the king of that castle, even though she may bring in more, as they say, the bacon, then we have an issue right there. So if the man is there, the woman is there, and the children are there, but mama is the one bringing home the we, then they look to her as the boss. And then if the woman doesn't support her man in some of the struggles that we do have, getting a good job or going out there getting an education, that creates some of the circumstances that we're facing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a few deadbeats out there, but it's more good men out there trying to fight this fight than deadbeats. But the only thing we place on pedestals is the deadbeats.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes the picture look a little more blurred than what it really is.
Okay. Umar, you want to address what I asked?
Sure, I agree with the brother. One thing I want to add is that whenever you have a problem, there are external reasons for that problem and external responsibilities. There's also internal reasons and responsibilities for that problem as well. One of the reasons why we have not effectively defined nor addressed the crisis in the extermination of black men is because we have not properly put it in context. Normally, when you have discussions on the oppression of black males, either it's focused on how they are exclusively responsible for their own problem without any sort of discussion on how the systemic issues that affect black men and how they actually feed their oppression. That's generally left out of the conversation. So a lot of times we don't solve the problem because we're often looking at what the black man needs to do differently. That's true. We have to do some things differently. But we can do everything different, but if we do not confront the system of white structural racism, no matter how much we do differently, we will still fall short because we're only taking care of 50% of the problem. On the other hand, you have individuals who focus exclusively on the structure. They say, well, until the white man stops doing this, or until the white man starts doing this, we can't get anywhere. That's also incorrect because it absolves the black man and the black community collectively of their responsibility in this situation. Here's the issue. Without a doubt, structural inequality and white systemic racism are the primary reason for not just the plight of black men, but for all problems in the black community. But we make those problems worse
by doing nothing about them. And thusly, we become the number one accomplice to our own extermination. So, yes, it is created by the system, but it is championed and perpetuated by ignorance in the black community. Now, there's five stages in the extermination model of black men. First, there's miseducation. Second, there's psychotropic medication. Third, there's institutionalization. Fourth, there is frustration, isolation, and irritation on part of the black male who has been miseducated and or psychotropically medicated and or incarcerated, and now he's been left with little opportunity to do anything with his life, and so now he's frustrated and isolated. And that frustration and isolation leads to extermination through homicide and increasingly through suicide, which is not getting the same amount of attention. And the reason why we don't spend a lot of time talking about black male suicide is because white people and a lot of black people don't care about black men killing themselves. They only care about the threat that black men pose to other people. So all of the focus is on controlling the black man, but almost none of the focus is on helping the black man. For example, and I'm going to stop after this, I was speaking with a parent about an hour ago on the telephone because this coming Monday I'm going to be hosting a all-day conference for a group of so-called at-risk black men at a comprehensive high school just outside of Philadelphia. So I was speaking with a parent, and she told me that her son was recently put on Concerta, which is a psychotropic medicine to help you focus. And I told the mother that your son's problem is not ADHD. Your son's problem is depression. His problem is the fact his parents don't get along. His problem is the fact that he doesn't have a male role model he can look up to. His problem is the fact that he's isolated. So she said, Umar, why did they diagnose him with ADHD and give him Concerta? I said, because whenever the psychologist or the psychiatrist see a black male coming into their office, they already know why he's there. He's there to get a disruptive behavior disorder diagnosis, and he's there to get medicine. How do they know this before they even talk to the parent? Because we know, everybody knows, that nobody cares about how the black man feels. They only care about how he acts. The issue is not mental health. The issue is behavioral control. So if the black man is to be saved, he is only to be saved by black men. And the reason we have not been successful is because black men are just as selfish, just as arrogant, just as self-centered, just as narcissistic as the dominant white European male society. And many of us are so capitalistic in our thinking that we refuse to help any other young black brother succeed unless we get paid for it.
You brought it to a head, and it is definitely true. That's why I brought your brothers on, for we can talk about this issue, because this issue is something serious in the community that us brothers, we definitely need to stand up and put ourselves on the forefront and take the stronghold of our kids and teach them how to be men. Teach them how to be providers. Teach them the land of the law when it comes down to being a black man. Because when we talk about this issue, for me, I want to talk about the solution. What can we do? This issue is an ongoing thing. There's a lot of so-called leaders. There's a lot of so-called politicians that say that they care, but once again, you are definitely correct. If you're not getting paid for it, they don't want to do it. That's why we're having a problem when it comes down to volunteering.
Yeah.
We have so much knowledge. Black men have so much knowledge, but we are self-centered. We are selfish, and we don't want to expand that knowledge to our kids or the community. And what we start to understand is that when we go to pass away, we're taking it with us. We're not giving nobody else nothing. And see, that's my problem that I'm having. Because when it's time for saying, cause I'm starting a foundation soon. And with the foundation, I need volunteers. And the first thing people say, you know, the economy is bad and I need to get paid. I understand it, but a lot of people don't understand your fruits of your labor. You do some work, you will get paid. It may not be now, but you will get paid. But it shouldn't be about that. It should be about helping one another. And we are so selfish in that. Do y'all agree?
Oh, I totally agree with you.
Yes.
In fact, sacrifice, the issue or the concept or the value of sacrifice has become a dying breed in the African-American community. We do not sacrifice. In fact, in the post-civil rights era, one of the biggest things that was lost in the collective unconscious of African people was the need to sacrifice. We have come to believe that we are somehow going to fix the schools, fix the neighborhoods, eliminate violence, build economic institutions, preserve life, take care of our elders without anybody sacrificing time, money, relationships, and their life. There is no sacrifice taking place in the black community, and that's why we haven't made any progress. We don't have really any serious black leadership. All we have is flabby-mouthed black leadership who love to talk, but they don't do anything. And we have to understand that no people ever rises higher than their leadership. Whenever there's an absence of leadership, then progress automatically goes backwards. And unfortunately, the leadership has become one of the biggest problems in the black community because your leaders don't serve you. They serve the interests of your enemies. The job responsibility of a black leader is to do what? Be a go-between between the power structure and the masses of oppressed black people. You are a go-between. So as a go-between, you're either going to do what? Advocate the issues that are important to the masses to the powers that be, or you are going to perpetuate, okay, the structural inequalities of the powers that be upon your people. And the reason why black leaders are so comfortable today, the reason why they are so rich today, the reason why they are so famous today is because they only exist to keep white people comfortable by keeping black people dumb, deaf, and blind. Until we stop pimping each other, because black leadership has become the number one business in America. In case you haven't noticed, the average black leader, whether he's an integrationist or a nationalist, whether he's a religious leader or a secular leader, he is a millionaire. There's nothing wrong with being rich. We can use a lot of money to build some of the institutions that we need. But we have to ask ourselves, why is the average nationally known black leader a millionaire? Because they get paid by pimping problems and by keeping black people ignorant, by misleading them in the direction in which they need to go. They get a pat on the head from Whitey. And when they get a pat on the head from Whitey, that's their approval to be an official black leader. Notice, you have never voted. You have never went to any election poll to choose your leaders. Black America has never had a vote for a leader. So if you have never had a vote for your choice of leader, how is it that you have a dozen of them? If you never chose them and they're your leaders, how did they become so? It's because your enemies choose your leaders to mislead you in the direction in which they have already chosen.
Yes, sir. And true black leadership comes at a cost. Once America put a price tag on true black leadership and the cost was death, then we start looking at leadership a little bit differently. Now we have people who say they're, like the brother said, they say they have our best interests at heart, but their actions don't go in tune with what they're saying. Any time we have to talk about why are young black men facing all these issues, when we spend all the time, waste all the time, talking about LeBron James going back to Cleveland, that's a problem. We got 25 cities that the FBI put out that are on the most dangerous cities to live in. And who do you think in these areas live in these areas? I was born in East St. Louis, Illinois. St. Louis, Missouri, right across the water, It's the number one most dangerous city to live in this country, per the FBI. I went to St. Louis, Missouri, and I visited the youth centers and the detention camps 3 times over the past year on my own dollar. Ain't nobody gave me a quarter. I did it on my own. And I seen the frustration on some of these young men's face. One of the youth centers I went to, I made some promises to the young men once I left and then tried to contact these people who work in these locations. When I called back and sent emails, now they ducking and dodging me, and it was free of charge.
Mm.
But I made a promise to 3 of them young brothers that I was going to come back and see them again and bring them my motivational book. And I did that. And when I looked at them little brothers face to face and told them, I said, you know what? They don't want me back in here. But I fought to get in here because I have to honor my word. We tell these young men we're going to help them. But the only help we try to give them is putting them off in football and baseball and basketball and selling them a dream that they're going to be the next Kobe Bryant or LeBron James or Michael Jordan for that matter, which is not true. They have a better chance at actually owning a basketball team or professional team than they got playing them sports.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we don't address that issue. We sell them a dream. You can be whatever you want to be, and the system is not set up to give them anything. 2 days ago, I was at UCLA, and I seen Tim Wise, the author of Colorblind, and he speaks on white privilege. And him being a national author, he couldn't even fill up the room at UCLA, his own self, talking about white privilege because nobody wanted to hear about it. But UCLA had a bonfire and a pep rally the same night, and it was standing room only.
Mm. So,
the only action that's going to move us forward is UOT, my brother that's on the phone, my brother that's going to get on the phone, and me. Because action starts with the small man who's willing to fight the fight and not talk the talk.
And I like to thank you for that, because this is my problem, and I want to piggyback on y'all stuff, but this is my problem. My problem is the lack of dedication, okay? And when we tell our young men different things, or we promise them different things, and a lot of people don't understand, kids know when you're doing it for money or when you're doing it from the heart. Believe me when I tell you, because, you know, because I'm from Philadelphia. I had my own after-school program down at Waterview Recreation Center. I started out with 4 kids. Ended up, 2 years later, I had almost 200 kids. And them kids understand what Ali was doing down at Waterview. They understand that I wasn't doing it for money. Because I put my own money up to help these young men. And unfortunately, I left to come to Atlanta, and it hurted me so bad when one of the kids said, Mr. Ali, you was like a father to me. And I really don't want you to go, but I know this is what you have to do. Thank you. I appreciate you. And that made me feel so good, but at the same time, it hurted me because I am leaving my home state, Philadelphia, for a better life here in Atlanta. But what I'm going to do, or what I'm starting to do, or what is going to happen, is that's why now I am networking. Because not only I want it back in Philadelphia, not only do I want it in Atlanta, not only do I want it in California, I want it all over. Because I want everyone to understand that this is something that we have to do, period. This is not something that we're going to do. No, this is something that's why I'm bringing y'all men together, because this is what we have to do. And it starts with us, the people who are dedicated, who are in the grind. Like I ask people, are you in it for the grind or are you in it for the success? Because it's two different things now. It's two different things, because you got people who just want to see the success, and you got the forefront people who's out there, as I call it, out there slaving. getting the masses to understand what we're trying to do. Because the grind is the first thing. The success is the second thing. But when you put your heart and soul in it, the success is going to come. And a lot of people is not built for that grind. They're only built for the success. So I ask, are you built for the grind or are you built for the success? But let me go ahead and give out the numbers to everybody. Area code 347-857-4751. The 1-800 number for all over, 877-404-0816. Y'all want to comment or y'all want to call in, feel free to, because this is something that we have to do. Now, since we started talking about this, let's talk about the school system, the lack of the educational for our kids.
Well, let me say this about the educational system. What people need to understand about public education is that it is not designed to provide anybody, black or white, but especially black, with a decent education. That is not the purpose of public education, nor has it ever been. The purpose of public education is to socialize the thinking of children in the direction which will be most advantageous for the capitalistic society in which they live. To socialize the thinking of children in that direction, which is most advantageous for the capitalistic society in which they live. Thomas Jefferson, racist, pedophile, owner of more than 200 slaves, founding father of this country, said that the educational system should have two levels, two stratums, two tracks. One for those who would dominate the society, and one for those who would serve the titans of industry. Public education primarily is not to help a child get out of the ghetto, get out of the slum, to build up the ghetto, to build out of the slum, but to make sure that they are able to be functional in the society as a low wage earner. So they don't educate your child to go to college, start their own business, enter into international competition. No, they just want to make sure that they have basic reading, writing, and arithmetic skills so that their labor can be exploited by one of the giants of capitalism for the greater part of their adult life. And the primary reason for public education is to teach you how to think. Excuse me, teach you what to think, not how to think. I always say that a child might can't read, but they know the Star Spangled Banner. They might can't do math, but they know who George Washington was. Okay? They might can't write, but they know everything about 1776. It is a social, cultural, and political processing. It is the whitening of black children. The whitening of black children. And unfortunately now, under the Obama era, public education now has a new responsibility when it comes to black men, and that is effeminizing and homosexualizing black boys. Effeminizing and homosexualizing black boys. Don't confuse effeminization with homosexualization. Homosexualization is the attraction for and participation in sexual relationships with a black man. A feminization is to adopt docile and feminine types of behaviors. So you can be effeminate and not be gay. You can be gay and be very masculine and not be effeminate. President Obama's Secretary of Education, Arne Duncan, who he brought in from Chicago, who fought for an all-homosexual high school in Chicago, is now the Secretary of Education. Kevin Jennings, an open homosexual who wants to see a mandatory kindergarten through 12th grade homosexual curriculum in every public and charter school in America, is now Obama's Director of Safe and Drug-Free Schools. Why is President Obama, who has a unique history himself that I'm not going to get into, but why is he putting so many homosexuals in charge of public education? It is to homosexualize
black people as a population control strategy. Many of us are looking at this thing through the lens of cultural molestation and European male behavior. Without a doubt, homosexual behavior has its roots in Greco and Roman culture. Many of the gods were gay. Many of the philosophers were gay. Julius Caesar was gay. Alexander the Great was gay. And the list goes on. But that's not why homosexuality is being perpetuated in the black community. They want black men to spend their lives having sex with black men. And they want black women to spend their lives having sex with black women, because if men are having sex with men and women are having sex with women, no babies are being born. You can't reproduce. Homosexuality is a population control strategy. And also with education, we have the disruptive behavior disorder phenomenon, the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, the conduct disorder, the oppositional defiant disorder, the disruptive behavior disorder. And then we have the special education of our black boys, putting young black men who have no problem learning in quiz and classes for the educably mentally retarded and the learning disabled so they can make money off of them. Because when you put children in special ed, the school gets money, extra money, for that child. So a special ed child is worth twice as much as a regular ed child. So you got black boys being put in special education, diagnosed with retardation, learning disabilities, and emotional disturbances that they do not have, just so they can be pimped by the power structure. We have kids on Cyclerp, Strattera, Adderall, Prozac, Depakote, and the list goes on. Why? Because these drugs are worth billions of dollars to the psychomedical drug industrial complex. Brain drugs for black boys makes it grosses on Wall Street, because all of the drug companies are publicly traded in New York City. They make $45 billion a year just off the brain drugs in black boys. But nobody's telling these parents that these drugs kill brain cells, mess with heart function, kidney damage, liver imbalance, that it messes with the boy's ability to produce healthy semen in his testicles. They are killing our young men. And the reason they're killing our young men is because we don't love them enough to educate them ourselves. The black male is public enemy number one in America. They care more about dogs. They care more about animals than they care about the life of a black man. Michael Vick went to jail for fighting dogs and drowning some. And I don't condone that behavior. But if a man can go to jail and lose his standard of living for killing an animal, why is it we got men walking around free right now who did no time? Ray Lewis for the Baltimore Ravens killed a man, didn't spend a day in jail. You just had a brother who was a cornerback, I believe, I forget the team, he killed a man, didn't spend a day in jail. But here's a man who killed a dog, he goes to jail. The life of a dog is worth more than the life of a black man. The black boy must be educated by black men and in schools designed to educate black boys. You cannot expect white teachers. And for those who don't know, 90% or greater of all teachers in America are white, and they are white women. So what we are saying is that we trust the education of black boys to white women. How in the hell do you expect the female European to properly educate the African boy? It is impossible. For two-thirds of American history, the African boy has been deliberately kept away from the European female. But in the 20th and 21st century, we're supposed to believe that the same woman who detested the black male's presence now cares about him enough to teach him. And we wonder why he's gay. We wonder why he can't read. We wonder why he drops out of school. We wonder why he's in jail. Because the system is insane. The problem with the black community is that insane behavior has been going on so long that we treat it as normal. I'm going to say it again and shut up. Insane behavior, absolutely abnormal behavior, has been going on so long that we treat it as normal. A black boy growing up without his father is an insane situation, but it's been going on so long, it's normal. A black boy taking dangerous, mind-altering, psychotropic, semen-killing drugs from the age of 3 until 21 is insane. But it's been going on so long that it's normal. A black boy at a historically black college 100 years ago would have never been seen wearing a skirt, wearing pumps with heels, wearing a bra, having a wig in his head and a pocketbook on his arm. But you can go to many of the black colleges today, as I do in lecture, and guess what? The black males are cross-dressing at institutions that were founded by black people to make sure we got a decent education. It is insane.
Well, let me hold up.
It's normal.
Let me go ahead and give out the number again in area code 347-857-4751-877-404-0816. Greg, would you like to piggyback off what he was saying?
Yes, I have a chapter in my motivational book called Where Do We Go From Here? We have established ourselves with a great deal of problems in this country. And a lot of us, we can go on and on about what our issues are. But the question is, what are we going to do now as we move forward? How are we going to move forward? What's the plan? Who's going to lead the way? Will the group be humble enough to accept their positions as we move forward? That's our issue. We all get caught up in instant gratification. That's our problem. If somebody comes across $50,000, what do they do with it? They go buy a car. They go get us some rims. They get a gold chain. They get all of these outward things that's so-called supposed to make them feel better about themselves. We don't address the issue on the inside. The issue, the concern is, what do you see when you look in the mirror? What image do you see? That's why, like my brother said, it has become acceptable to be a certain way. When 30 years ago, we don't have to go back 100 years, 30 years ago, wasn't nobody running around with no purses and high heels and boots and different things like that. I believe in to each is your own. But like I say, just 30 years ago, just 20 years ago, people were not that comfortable until they started being seen on television. Mm-hmm. And since we look at so much TV, and that's our educational system, that tells us what we should be. Okay, BET plays a video. This is how I should act as a young black male. I'm supposed to drive this type of car. I'm supposed to wear these type of clothes. I'm supposed to listen to this type of music. I'm supposed to degrade women in this way. Mm-hmm. And those things are acceptable in the society. You can't get on TV and talk about nobody else, women, like we can get on TV and talk about our women. You can't get on TV and disrespect any other race like we are allowed to get on TV and disrespect each other. Those are the questions. Now, what is the answer? Because first thing everybody's going to say is, well, I should have the right to be who I am, and I should be able to act however I want to act. But if that's detrimental to us as a whole, we have to begin to check that in our own community. If we're not for each other and we don't fight for each other, then how do we expect anybody else to do these things? Those are the issues. Those are the concerns that we have to address. We have to get back to being real simple, looking in the mirror, knowing who you are, know where you're going, and know how you're going to get there. And no one on the outside looking in can distract you from your personal destination. We can go on and on and on and on. But my question to you two brothers, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
I wanted to piggyback briefly, and I agree 110% with what my brother said, and we all probably need to have a conversation after the radio sometime in the future, talk about some things that we could do collectively. But here's one thing that we have to realize. The Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, who gave us the red, black, and green flag and the largest black organization in modern history, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, said that if the black man and woman are not careful, they will drink in all the poison of Western civilization and die from the effects of it. If the black man and woman are not careful, they will drink in all the poisons of Western civilization and die from the effects of it. That statement by Mr. Garvey, uttered about 100 years ago, is so prophetic, because when you look at most of what we suffer from, it is the result of choosing to abandon who we are and become who they are. And the reason we've chosen to abandon who we are
and become who they are is because we have been indoctrinated with the most virulent form of self-hatred that any people have ever had for themselves. When you look at the behavior of black women, the average sister, and I love them to death, but the average sister spends one-third to one-half, if not more, of her disposable income trying to look European, whether it's contacts, whether it's skin lightener, whether it's European-designed clothes that don't even match their natural, beautiful African figure, the weaves, the perms, the blonde hair care, even the sisters with locks got their hair colored blonde. So they Afrocentric with the left hand, but they still want to be white with the right hand. And so we have to look at the voluntary, okay, emasculation, okay, or the voluntary destruction of the black phenotype as something being other than beautiful. Look at the black man. As soon as he get educated, as soon as he get a halfway decent job, he wants to go and find a white woman to put on his arm. So we got black men worshiping white women, and we got black women trying to be white women. So obviously, what is the child going to do? The child learns by what they see, not by what they hear. And unfortunately, many of our little young black sisters, 2, 3, 4 years old, are getting their hair permed and straightened at 2, 3, and 4. They are being taught to hate who they are by their mothers even before they go to kindergarten. Look at the dolls that they play with. I was with a sister the other day in one of my schools evaluating her for special education. Wasn't a damn thing wrong with her. And this sister came in there with what? A book of Barbie. The white hair, excuse me, blonde hair, white skin, blue eyes. And this was her favorite book. So if Barbie is her favorite book, Barbie becomes her standard of beauty, so she's going to try to look like Barbie. And that's why young black teenage girls are on the rise in terms of being diagnosed with anorexia and bulimia, eating disorders, purging their food, self-inflicted starvation, trying to look white. Look at Beyonce, one of the most successful black female musicians in American music history, and she won't even wear her own hair because she's too ashamed that it's ugly. If we don't deal with the self-hate of the race, nothing we do will matter. But I need to say this. Mr. Garvey said the greatest weapon used against black people is disorganization. The greatest weapon used against black people is disorganization. And Umar Johnson is saying that the second greatest weapon used against black people is misinformation. We are deliberately given misinformation about our predicament. Let me give you an example. Barack Obama spells promise for black people. 40 million black people in America. Damn near everyone ran out and voted for the man. That was not the problem that you voted for him. The problem was you didn't have a conversation with the candidate before you put him in office. And so now black people are saying, well, wait a minute. President Obama looking out for Hispanics. He's looking out for homosexuals. He gave them a Supreme Court justice. He gave the Hispanics a Supreme Court justice. Now he's looking out for illegal immigrants. Why don't he do something about the miseducation of black boys? Why don't he do something about police brutality? Why don't he do something about the broken special education, the miseducation, and the psychotropic medicalization issue against our black children? He's not going to, because you don't value your vote. You give your vote to anybody who looks like you before you have a conversation. So President Obama ain't going to do a damn thing for black people because black people didn't make him pledge anything to you before he did what he did. But even though we've been ignored by him and every other black elected official, we still think we're doing better. Are you doing better? Hell no. But you're being told you're doing better. And because you're being fed misinformation about your racial condition in America, you are actually participating in your extermination by doing nothing about it. So I caution everybody, and I am the first to want to get out there and make a change. And I hope by the work that I do as an educated psychologist and political scientist that I'm actually making that change. But let me say this. Because misinformation and disorganization are the greatest weapon used against us, we should not move out doing anything of significance, not what we do as individuals, but if we are going to put people's lives at risk, if we are going to put a lot of resources at risk, a lot of time and energy, if people are at risk for losing their jobs and other things, which is necessary, make it count for something, which is to say that sometimes we rush out to get things done when we don't even know why we're doing it. Okay, and if you don't know why you're doing it, or if you don't have a thorough understanding of the problem that confronts you, your solution will fail. So you always get black folks who say, let's go out and change it. I don't want to talk about the problem. I want to fix it. You can't fix a damn thing on earth if you first don't understand how it got to be broken in the first place. And
mm-hmm.
what I find with black folks is we don't understand the educational system. That's why it ain't fixed. We don't understand the psychotropic medical movement. That's why it ain't fixed. We don't understand the mass incarceration movement. That's why it ain't fixed. You got to know the details. And unfortunately, since the civil rights movement, more almost 50 years, if not more so, we have wasted lives, we have
yeah.
wasted money, we have wasted time, we have wasted investment in resources because we are not patient enough to study the problem in order to fix it. If you really understand something, you can fix it quite easily, because if you look deep enough into the problem, the solution is there, because all the solution is to undo what was done, to put back what was taken away. But too often we are functioning off of misinformation that leads us right back to the end of the circle where we started.
Yes, sir. We have been conditioned to fall for the feel good. We have been conditioned to believe instant gratification, that at the click of a finger, once they put Barack and President Barack Obama in the White House, that everything was going to change the next morning. And it doesn't work like that. True black leadership comes at a cost. And they have frightened a lot of us into believing if you truly step into them shoes, then that cost is your life. And not too many people throughout history have willing to sacrifice their life for the greater good of the community.
That's definitely
so
true.
Once you start to play with a community, a race, or whatever you call it, once you start playing with their mental like that, that's why some of the slaves stopped running away. You run away, we catch you, we bring you back, we cut off your foot. You run away, we bring you back, we whip you in front of everybody. That's conditioning. So 40, 50 years ago, when all those black leaders gave their life for us, everybody start backing off. They start willing to go to the coffee table and negotiate. Everybody stopped going against the grain. Well, give us a little bit and we'll take that. Well, give us a little bit and we'll take that. Well, give us a little bit and we'll take that. They got us where they want us. It's a choice. Either you choose A or you choose B. And both of the choices are their choices. And
that
until we come up with an alternative or an option for our own choice, we will continue to face the things that we face.
That's
I took a job
point.
In FedEx as a manager 8 years ago, and they put me in charge. And I was in charge of people who look like me. And since I was in charge of people who look like me, I had to prove to them that I should be in charge.
That's right.
Versus if a Caucasian
right.
walked in there with a clipboard and some Dockers and a collared shirt, he doesn't have to prove anything. I told him, stop cussing on the belt. Stop disrespecting each other. It's a female right there. Why are you talking like that? And they despise me for that. And these are supposed to be so-called educated or professional people who got a so-called decent job, who got a mortgage, and all those different things.
Let me
and
go
until
ahead.
I gave them a choice or lead them to believe that they had a choice is when things start turning around for me, and now all of a sudden I was respected. I didn't need their respect in the beginning, and I don't need their respect today. But until I changed up the playing field a little bit and start talking they talk, then they finally heard me. And that's when I learned you cannot be honest with dishonest people.
Well, let me go ahead and piggyback. And Umar, you know, you made some valid points how we are still trained, basically. Because let me go ahead and make this point right here. When I was in Philadelphia during the summertime, and I jumped on a bus, and how our people fought for us to sit at the front of the bus. We are so trained, we go straight to the back of the bus. And when I say that, it shows what we are doing. We haven't moved. Our people from Martin Luther King to Marcus Garvey to Malcolm X to Nat Turner to all the men that try to get us to a place where we need to be, we are still going backwards. Our ancestors are turning in their grave. The struggles that they put for us to go to these good schools, we're not even doing it. Because we don't want to be, quote, I don't want to be the smart person. And we have to understand that we, as men, we have to start educating. Start with educating. And my dad used to always tell me, he said, you want some knowledge? Go to the library. It's right there. You know why they put the library there? Because they know that we ain't going to go. The library have all the knowledge you need. Downtown in Philadelphia, the main library got everything you need. But you know what we do? We go right past it. Or we go to the library to jump on Facebook or MySpace. But we don't go to the library to educate ourselves, to learn what our ancestors had done. And when they find out what our ancestors have done, then the problem that we are having, it will start to become a solution. Because you start to get the understanding of what is going on. I want to give you another example. When you go to jail, they put you in jail for you to sit and understand what you have done. But we go in jail and just say it's rec time. What do? We do the same thing that we was doing when we was outside. Sitting on a corner, chilling, talking to your boy, smoking some weed, playing some hoop. Instead of educating yourself and understanding, okay, this is what I have done. I've done this. Let me go ahead because I'm going to be coming out soon. Let me go ahead and put myself in a better situation. It starts with us. It starts with the education. It starts with us understanding what we need to do as a people. And you made a valid point. Organization. How many of our men are in an organization? I'm talking productive organization. I'm not talking about the other organization. I'm talking about a productive organization that is out there in the community. Just don't show up when a major tragedy happens. Just don't show up just to be on the news. I'm talking about a productive organization that you rarely even hear about. How many of our men are in these organizations?
Now, one thing
I
wanted to say.
It ain't no structure.
I'm sorry.
You know, because, no, why? Because there is no structure. The black men's structure, the black people, period, structure is gone. We're not even going back to basics. Of what our grandmothers and great-grands have done. Going back to basics. We're not even doing that. But go ahead, Greg.
What I wanted to say, there's a saying that's attributed to Buddha, founder of Buddhism, who was actually an African. And he said, the problem is that either you do not start to fix your problem, he's referring to. The problem is either you do not start or you do not go far enough. You do not start or you do not go far enough. I'm going to go back to the example you drew of the Montgomery bus boycott and black folks continue to sit on the back. And of course, hindsight is 20/20, so I'm not criticizing my ancestors, but I'm critiquing the past so that we can learn from them to do better in the future. The best thing that could have came out of the Montgomery bus boycott after those 381 days of protest was not for the black people to earn the right to sit at the front of the bus. Remember, you must go all the way. The best thing that could have come out of the Montgomery bus boycott was for black people to take their money and start their own bus company.
Yes.
Had they done that, they would have bankrupted the bus company, and white folks would have been driving on black-owned buses.
Yes.
See, because many of us have an integrationist consciousness, we see the highest level achievement as being full acceptance by white folks. We got to stop doing that. For example, right now, I just read a brief from the NAACP. They're down in Wake County, North Carolina, and they're fighting school segregation. And they're saying that here we are 50 years after Brown versus Board of Education, 55 years or so, and the schools are still segregated. We want desegregation. And so I'm cautioning my brothers and sisters in the NAACP, don't fight for desegregation. Fight for access to the same quality and standard of educational resource that the white children have. A black child is not going to be better educated just because you sit them next to a white child. In fact, as a psychologist working with black males who go to predominantly white private schools every day, I can tell you that sometimes they are academically abused by their white teachers and white schoolmates who are not used to being around black children and who have been taught negative things about black children. I've had young men tell me they were called the N-word. They were told that they were monkeys. They belong in the jungle. So I caution the NAACP, just like I caution any black parent who's about to send their child to a predominantly white private school. I'm not going to say not do it, but I'm going to say think about why you're doing it and think about the harm that can come to your child. You put a black boy in a predominantly white school and you wonder why he wants to marry a white woman, well, that's what you showed him. You put a black girl in a white school and you wonder why
Umar.
He hates her hair? Yes, sir.
Umar, hold up. Yo, the phone lines is buzzing. We're going to go ahead and take some calls. I want you to hold that thought for a minute.
No problem.
Right now, we're going to go to 314-600. How you doing? You live on the OT show with Umar and Gregory Arnold.
How you doing, brothers?
Thanks,
it's Don Dace, Vice President of Help Enterprises. I want to commend you, brothers, for taking a stand and taking time out of your busy days to come and address these issues that we're plaguing in the inner cities, basically.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Brother.
I definitely appreciate it.
Yes. We have an issue dealing with the inner cities, and Greg has a wonderful thing going on with Help Enterprises. It's called $100,000 Community Challenge. And what that $100,000 Community Challenge is to help eliminate illiteracy throughout the inner cities. And we're searching for the Motivated 10. And what that Motivated 10 is 10 groups, 10 organizations, 10 communities, 10 positive people to come together, and $1 minimum per book sold will go back to the inner city organization or group that signs on with Help Enterprise to help us eliminate illiteracy throughout the inner cities.
Well, you know what? You might as well sign me on with Greg. I already know you're going to sign me on because we're going to go forward with this. So you might as well check me on right now. We all know about that. But that is definitely, this is what we're talking about, y'all. This is what we are needing right now. Start in the community. And here we are right now. Brother, I'd like to thank you for coming on and talking about this. We're definitely going to keep in touch with you. But the phone line is buzzing, so I'm going to have to cut you off for a bit. But definitely keep on listening. I appreciate you. And you might have to sign the OT show up for it because, you know, we're going to go forward with this. Umar, want to say anything?
That sounds great. I just appreciate all you brothers and just keep on doing the great work.
Thank you. Right now, we're going to go to line 16, area code 215-882. How you doing? Because you live on the OT show with OT, Greg, and Umar. You want to state your name and where you're calling from? Okay, hold up. I don't know what's going on. All right, well, we'll come back to that. Finish what you were saying, Umar. Hold up.
Basically, go ahead.
Hold on. Because how you doing? Because you like OT show. State your name. Will you call your name? Hello? Okay. Go ahead, Umar.
Basically, I have pretty much concluded that statement right then and there. One thing I want to do real quickly, if it's okay for you, OT, I'm getting a couple of Facebook requests by some folk who are listening to your show, and they wanted to have my contact information. So anyone who needs to reach me, I can be reached at area code 215-989-9858. Again, that's 215-989-9858. You can also email me. My email address is my name, Umar, U-M-A-R, Abdullah Johnson. Umar Abdullah Johnson, one word, at yahoo.com. You can also request me on Facebook, as some has already done, in terms of a bio, as one sister wanted to know about. You can view that online at blackexperts.com or blackspeakers.com. I do offer a free psychoeducational workshop or conference. It's free to the black community to educate parents on how to advocate and protect their sons and daughters in public, charter, private, and parochial schools. We cover four main areas in the training: special education, psychotropic medication, feminization, and we also deal with the disruptive behavior disorder movement. You will be taught about what you can do to keep your child out of special ed, what you can do to keep them off drugs, what you can do to keep them from being diagnosed with ADHD, and what you can do to supplement their education, because right now only one out of every four black males is graduating in America with a diploma, and we have to do something about that. So there's no fee. The psychoeducational conferences are free, but if you are not driving distance from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is my base of operations, you will have to cover travel and lodging, but the presentations are totally free.
Okay, let's go ahead to another line, 267-767. How you doing? Right now you live on the OT show with your boy OT, Greg V. Arnold, and Umar Abdul. How you feeling? State your name. Where you calling from?
Yo, what's up, Otis? Jeez.
How you doing, Jeez? How you feeling today, man?
I'm chilling, man. You know, I'm down here in Atlanta. I was listening to the show. You know, was trying to get me to call in, and I came in on something that's near and dear to my heart. You know, I work at an all-male institution. And what I find is that a lot of our conversation, we reference a lot of history. Unfortunately, what we do is we reference history that's out of the reach of the brothers that we service. So, you know, we talk a lot about the civil rights movement. And while we all understand how important that is to our culture and to us as a people, our young people, they don't identify with that, because the struggle is not revealing itself in the same way. And I feel that we do our young men a disservice when we don't give them current people, or people that they can touch, or they can see and they can feel, that people that they can experience to look up to. I hear a lot of people, like at my job, they done brought Al Sharpton and they brought Jesse Jackson, and I'm like, you know, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton are iconic to young brothers, but they really don't speak the same language. You know, they're not talking about the things that are really more so current issues for them. I just think that there's a big gap that exists, and if we don't start bringing people around and talk the language of the young people, then we're not going to move forward, you know, because they're not trying to hear anything about Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. They're going to listen, and they're going to understand that they're important to our history, but they're not going to see the things that the way that they're seeing it, because racism, injustice, the issues of social justice, they kind of like, they were like different because they were in a different time, and you were dealing with a different group of people, and they responded to things in different ways. So we just got to make sure that we make our language current so that we can provide the best service to our young brothers.
Jeez,
hey, what would you suggest?
Well, I would suggest you utilize the people that are new. You know, a lot of our students are interested. A lot of our young brothers are interested in hip-hop and music. And, you know, some people will frown on, let's use Waka Flocka. We bring Waka Flocka to a college, and talk to or to a school to talk, and the teachers would be like, oh man, this guy is clearly uneducated. We don't always have to bring people that are known for the most positive things. What we want to do is create a better learning environment and make sure that we involve the students in the learning process so they can be a part of the teaching. They can express to Waka the things that they like and the things that they don't like. You know what I'm saying? We always take the top-down approach. Oh, well, I'm older than you, so younger brother, you have to learn from me because you're novice, because you came after me. And I think that that's a type of pedagogy of the past. You know what I'm saying? It's not necessarily engaged. And the students of today, they want to be involved in the learning process. So that's one of my suggestions.
We would have to. I seen this Greg Arnold. I seen Waka Flocka on 106 in Park, and they asked him a couple questions about college and some other things, and they stumbled him up a little bit. What I suggest, I think you're right on point with a brother like Waka Flocka. Some of these people who are popular in the community would go in with a brother like myself or the brother from Philadelphia, and he can introduce us, and then we do the talking. And then he stamped the approval that what we're talking about is what it is. But if we send him in to do what we need to do, then only thing the young dude's going to get out of that is what he says on his music.
Well, what I'm saying is by using a person like them, like if they make it cool to learn by being in a learning process, you know what I'm saying? Then the students are going to want to emulate that behavior. It's like more so
utilizing. No, I'm cool what you're saying. No, I'm not against what you're saying. I'm just saying we have to do it. We have to calculate how we do it. I'm all for learning being cool, and the only way for us to get that point across, we have to give them young boys an option. And the option that I'm saying is, yeah, me and Waka Flocka go in there together, or Waka Flocka and the brother on the line from Philadelphia, they go in together, and the Waka Flocka say, yo, this is what it is, y'all listen, and then we start talking.
You're right. Yeah, because we can't leave.
That's what I'm saying.
Go ahead and talk too much.
Right.
I understand.
Well, geez, yo, man, I'd like to appreciate you for actually coming on, man. I definitely appreciate you. I appreciate the love of you actually posting it on your Facebook. A lot of people did it. I definitely appreciate the love. That shows what a true homie really is. Appreciate you.
All right, man, no problem. Thanks for having me. Talk to you.
Oh, yeah,
peace.
Definitely. Peace. We're going to go right now to, I think that's Ayo Cool. No. Well, the person just dropped off real fast. Okay, but I want to piggyback on that, too, about having rappers and having celebrities do certain things. And my problem with that is, and I'm going to be honest and real about it, yes, we can piggyback off of him, but my problem with that is that the kids understand him. You know, Waka Flocka or Young Jeezy or Cassidy or Beanie Siegel, they understand them. But when it's time for us to start talking, yeah, they can introduce us and put the stamp of approval, but are they going to be really listening?
Well, here's my issue. I'm not interested in legitimizing any Negro who is the embodiment of black self-hatred and insane behavior. I don't care who he is. I don't want them introducing me. I don't want them co-hosting with me because my message has nothing in common with theirs. See, understand this about art and culture, and sometimes we are reluctant to critically and constructively criticize hip-hop brothers, some of them, because all of them are not into degeneracy and negative imagery. But the truth of the matter is, that embodiment, everything that's wrong with the black male, cannot be used to fix the black male. If I'm trying to cure a disease, I don't bring the disease. If I'm trying to cure poverty, I don't make more poverty. So if I'm trying to teach black men how to think, bring someone who don't know how to think. See, if I'm standing on the stage with them, then the message is conflicted. And what they're going to do is harmonize or draw a parallel between what I'm representing and what some Negro buffoon rapper is representing, and they're going to say that, guess what, I can be intelligent
and conscience, and I can still be about having sex with women, selling drugs, smoking weed, and being a consumer of gross materialism. Those two things are not consistent. I don't want the message of Marcus Garvey harmonized with the message of Beanie Siegel. I respect the brother, but I don't want to harmonize that. I don't want the message of Lil Wayne to be harmonized with Malcolm X. They do not belong in the same venue. And I'm going to say this. Now, I go around the country speaking quite regularly. As I said, I have a conference on Monday. I have never had a problem connecting with a black male audience. See, what it is, it's the spirit and the realism of the person bringing the presentation. We don't need no buffoons to introduce us, because to do that says that we don't have enough merit to stand on our own. You cannot use degeneracy to implement a change in consciousness. You can't do that. I don't want to share the stage with them.
Mm. Right now, we're going to go to a caller. We're going to go to Dorian. That's his name? Yeah, Dorian. We're going to go to Dorian. How you doing, Dorian? You live on the O2 Show. State your name. Well, I already know your name. Hello? Okay. Okay. Dorian got cut off again. Hey, Dorian, I guess try to see about another phone or something. I agree with you on that, because, see, this is how can you talk about changing? And see, and this is how I feel about the hip-hop community. Matter of fact, I'm actually going to have a hip-hop, the state of hip-hop, and how it affect our community next year. Everybody, so 2011, be prepared for that, because this is going to be monumental, just like this is monumental. When you talk about drugs and sex in your music, but then you go around and you say, well, this is what you shouldn't do. Oh, I got locked up and this is what I have done. I'm a changed person. But then in the next breath, you're still talking about the same thing. We cannot, as a people, for me, I can't understand that, and I won't never understand that, because now you talk about two different things. You know, that's just like how I'm going to tell somebody to stop smoking, and I'm still smoking.
Right.
How I'm going to tell somebody stop drinking, and I'm still drinking. How I'm going to tell somebody get into the community and let's help our kids if I'm not doing the same thing. Like my dad said, like the Native American indigenous people say, you speak with false tongue, which is true. There's a lot of hip-hop, there's a lot of politician, there's a lot of men, there's a lot of organizations, there's a lot of companies that speak with false tongue. What it is they try to will you in. This is what they're going to do, they're going to will you in. And once they will you in, they try to control what you're trying to do. That's why, and I'm be honest with you, I have got offers to go on national radios. But my problem with it is that they try to change what I'm standing for. So that's why I'm still on internet radio. Because you're not going to change my message of what I'm trying to do for your purpose. Because that's not me. My dad always say, on your own, you have control of what you do. If you fall, that's on you, because you own it. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to see y'all piggyback, a vision. When we have a vision, our vision is followed by our flock. The only way our vision go forward, if we got a flock to bring that vision forward. If we don't have our people helping us, the vision is not going to go forward. Anybody want to comment on
that? You are correct. I'm not against any of that, but I'm for what I believe in. So when they put the wrong people in the wrong places and ask the wrong questions, that's what you get. Like I said, I personally seen the dude on, and I ain't going in on the man because I don't know him. So what I'm saying is not meant to be disrespectful, but I seen him on the TV, Waka Flocka on TV, and they asked him a few slick questions that either his PR didn't clear, or they was trying to be funny, or they wanted to see what his reaction would be that he was not an expert on. So then when he starts stumbling through the answers,
it makes you look a certain way. But that's his lane and what he got going on. So if that's how he make his living, that don't mean I have to agree with it. That don't mean I condone it. What I'm talking about is the person when you look in the mirror. And that's who you have to address first. A lot of us waste a lot of time spending on what everybody else needs to do, and we not in tune with what we're supposed to be doing. Once you learn how to lead yourself, then you can lead somebody else. That's our problem with our leadership. Because if we get a group of us together, then everybody want to be king.
Mm-hmm.
When we should be saying, it's 10 thrones, we all kings.
Mm-hmm.
And we gonna humble ourselves enough to follow the right lead. But we get in the room, 10 of us, and we so all caught up in what we think and our personal experiences up until that point in life, that our way has to be the right way. No, your individual way is all that you know. And if I put in a little bit, what I've been through, and OT, you put in a little bit, and my brother from Philly put in a little bit, now we can get there quicker. Because if you carrying my message and I'm carrying your message and we carrying all three of our messages, in each place each one of us go, is getting there a little quicker. People talk about change. I'm talking about change from within. I created a $100,000 community challenge. For every book I sell, I'll give a dollar back to the community. It ain't got to go. You don't get taxed first, and then somebody get paid for the money, and then once the money get back to the community, it's 2 cents. I'm talking about 100,000 books, and I'm talking about $100,000 and 10 individual organizations, groups, people, whoever, whatever, take that $10,000 to a community center that's going to have a direct impact on these young boys' lives. So when they come into the community center, there's a computer. There's somebody there that volunteered to teach them how to work that computer. Let's stop buying the Wii's and the PlayStations and learn how to make them our damn selves. Because we the best buyers in the world. We buy any and everything. But we don't own nothing.
Mm.
Our sisters support the Wii's, right? How many weed shops we own? And then when a sister do own a weed shop, the other ones say, she charging too damn much. Because she can't get the same price as the other people get because they stick together. So instead of giving a sister the extra $5 that she charging y'all so she can get a better price, we talk behind her back. So let's stop talking about change. And let's really make some change. And we got three powerful men on the phone right now. Let's move forward.
Omar, you want to piggyback off of that?
I agree with what the brother said. One thing about organizing and one thing we have to understand about our condition as African people in this country is that we are not where we are simply because we've chosen not to do. We are where we are because there's a vested interest in keeping us there. For example, we have information that has told us, without a doubt, that there are black organizations all across this country which are controlled by, started by, or funded by the FBI and CIA. And the purpose of these black organizations is to harness all of the revolutionary and emotional energy of black people and keep it from going anywhere. For example, when we look at the NAACP and the Urban League, and I know a lot of good people in both organizations, so I'm not criticizing the membership, but I'm criticizing the historical structure. The NAACP was started by a white woman, Mary Wright Overton. They brought the boy in and others, but it is basically has, is, and forever will be a white organization. The same thing with the Urban League. The reason why the NAACP never has really focused upon helping black people build independent institutions is because they are funded by rich white philanthropists who have a vested interest in making sure nobody ever seriously organizes black people into the direction we need for our own self-reliance. So we have to understand that when we tell black people to join organizations, I'm not telling black people to join any organization.
I'm telling black people to investigate those organizations and their histories. Understand that an institution never, ever deviates from its history. Never deviates from its history. So you have to study the history. Why was it originally founded in the first place? Why is the NAACP here? Why is the Urban League here? Why are the Masonic Lodges here? Why were they originally started? Okay, because if what you are looking for has not materialized in the history, if it was not a goal, then you're not going to get it now. Now, you can redo an organization, create it all over from scratch, but rarely does that happen. And I see a lot of good black people waste their time 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years, their entire life in a particular organization, only to realize that they have wasted their time. So we got to be strategic, because we have to understand we are the number one accomplice to our oppression, but we are not our number one enemy, as is often stated. Our number one enemy is structural white racism. There is nobody to compete with the number one spot for the enemies of black folks. But we help it because of our misinformation. Also with leadership, you got to study the leaders of these organizations. Many of them are on the payroll of white philanthropists, the FBI, the CIA. For example, Dr. King, Dr. Martin Luther King's personal traveling photographer, was an FBI agent. Booker T. Washington's vice president at Tuskegee Institute was an agent for the United States Army, who was put there to keep watch over Booker T. Washington. One of Marcus Garvey's trusted agents was an FBI agent. One of Malcolm's security, FBI agent. So we have to study, because we have just as many black people working against our interests as we have working for our interests. The reason why we stay where we are as a people is because we are faced with two realities that no other race of people on earth are faced with, not the European, the Arab, or the Oriental. We are faced with, number one, global complicity in our oppression. That is to say that every other race and ethnicity on the face of the earth agrees that black people should be exterminated and kept down. You don't have an ally in Hispanics, although you keep trying to make one, you ain't got one. You don't have an ally in Hispanics. You don't have an ally in Arabs. You don't have an ally in white folks. You don't have an ally in Native Americans, although you keep trying to make them. You don't have an ally in anyone but yourself. The whole world condoned slavery. The whole world condoned Jim Crow. The whole world condoned the colonization of Africa, and the whole world condones the continual oppression of black people and the particular extermination of black men. So that's number one. And number two, the other reality that we are faced with is that black people hate each other more and fight more inside the race than we are fighting outside the race. We fight with each other far more often than we fight with any external enemy that we got. And as the Bible tells you, any religious book tells you, and I'm not a Christian, but it is true, a house divided cannot stand. You got black people fighting against each other because they have different religions. You don't accept Christ, I can't work with you. You don't accept Muhammad, I can't work with you. You not a Hebrew, you not a Moor, you not Yoruba, you not Kemet, you not Dogon, you not Nation of Islam, you not 5% guys and earths. Fighting over beliefs. I don't give a damn what nobody believes. Believe whatever you want. A political movement is based on principles of reality, actual material circumstances that a people face that have to be changed. We have to respect each other's religion and respect it enough to leave it the hell out of the political conversation. Because whenever you bring God into a conversation about black political progress, it weakens it, because black people have an image of the deity that says we are supposed to absolutely love everybody no matter how bad they treat us.
And that was one of the reasons they gave us God. See, it ain't no consequence on us fighting against each other. But once you start fighting against the whites, the Mexicans, the Indians, and any other race, there's a consequence for that. And that's why all these prisons are being built. And that's why they're filling us up in these prisons. Because we can fight against each other, and don't nobody say nothing. But once you start fighting against them, then they claim, they reverse it at this point, now it's race-related. If two young black boys jump on a white boy on the bus, then that's race-related. But 40 years ago, and still some places down south, if two white boys hang a black boy, it was justified. That's why we fight against each other, because we don't stop it, and ain't nobody else going to stop it. But you try to do something to anybody that's non-black, and you see what happened to you. These are the things that we have to address. Like my brother's saying, this stuff is real. They gave you religion. They gave you God to make sure you stay separated. And we bite it hook, line, and sinker. Like my brother just said, well, if you ain't a Christian, you can't get along with a Muslim. And this one can't get along with this one. And this one can't get along with that one. But the issues that we have trumps all of that. Because if you're Christian, you're still black. If you're Muslim, you're still black. If you're 5%er, you're still black. And that's the one common denominator in all of it. You can be whatever you want to be. At the end of it, you're still black. So we can keep fooling ourselves and trying to fool each other and chasing a whole bunch of dreams and things in the sky that's not helping us, or we can accept each other's religion, we can respect each other's religion, and then we can address the issues, the common issues that we all have.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, full-fledged. And this is why I brought y'all together, for we can have this dialogue, where we can discuss these certain things that need to happen. I might have to apologize. Omar Tyree is actually still in a conference. He just texted me, and he said that he apologized, but he's still in the conference, still speaking down in North Carolina. So definitely we're going to try to get him back onto the show, because I actually want a part two with this, because this is not over. 2 hours is not long enough. This is not over. But I definitely got to say thank you to both of y'all, because this issue is a long-drawn issue. And until we start getting our men together to come up with the solution, then nothing is not going to go forward. Greg, I definitely appreciate you, because right now, you know, you are doing something for our literacy in the community. And I hope a lot of people will start stepping up and doing the same thing. Umar, I knew you for a minute. You probably don't even know this. But you've been doing a lot, especially in Philadelphia. And we all have to get both of our organizations, from radio to book to public speaking, we all need to get together, and we all need to address these situations, these issues that we are having. Because until we start addressing it with ourselves, let's first start with ourselves. First, we have to start looking in the mirror and say, what can I do as a man to help stop or help prevent or just neutralize what is going on with our young men? It starts with ourselves first, because I have always been taught, if you can't help yourself, how can you help others? So it starts with us. Then we go out and we start helping others. So right now, we are going to help others. I know you're doing your thing in Philadelphia. I know you're doing your stuff in California. I'm doing my stuff in Atlanta. But we going to get together. I'm going to make this happen for us to get together and just talking to the community. I don't care where it's at. It could be in Wisconsin is all I care. But we need to start addressing these issues, start addressing these situations, and to start with us right now.
OT, were you at the Black African Holocaust Conference in Atlanta 2 weeks ago?
No, I wasn't. I actually was in Columbus, actually visiting a family member.
Okay, because I was down there for that conference. Actually, if you get the November 30th issue of The Final Call, they did a cover story on the conference, pretty good. But I was down there. I was saying to myself why we didn't connect. But for Brother Greg, I'll be over in California. I don't know if you're in Northern California. I'm still waiting for the information from the folks who are bringing me out there. But I'm going to be there the weekend of the 24th. Of February, the last weekend in Black History Month, I'll be over in California, so it's possible we could hook up. In fact, there's another spot I'm coming to in California as well, but
Just make sure you shoot me an email.
I'm all for it, brother. Let's make it happen. I'm down in Southern California, but if you're going to be in there in February, I can make arrangements to come up there and check you out. We need to meet. We need to connect. We need to put our minds together. Brother, you're brilliant. I appreciate all the information you shared. OT, the same love. Good, positive brothers on the phone. I'm motivated. I'll continue my fight. Like I say, I believe it's a lot of self-esteem and literacy. I believe if you know how to read, then you can get your swagger going. And I know for a fact, sitting in a classroom, some of the kids who can't read, they scared to death of the teacher calling on them. So I'm gonna continue my fight. Like I say, I'm out here in Los Angeles. I'm slanging and banging. I was born in East St. Louis. I've been out there. I've been to St. Louis. I'll be coming to Atlanta very soon. I got some in the work to make an East Coast trip, so I will be seeing you, brothers. Like I say, for the listeners, if you want to check me out, I'm at the Mecca of Motivation.com. That's MECCAOFMOTIVATION.com. Mecca of Motivation.com. My email is askgreg2help@yahoo.com. And let's make this happen. I'm willing and able. When y'all ready to roll, let's get it in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Umar, you want to give everybody your information where they can find you from?
Sure. Anybody need to reach me? I'm based in Philadelphia, but I'm all around the country. So if you're looking to bring me into your town to do one of those psychoeducational workshops, you'd be surprised. I may be close. Most important thing is to get me dates, because I've been getting hit up here on Facebook and folks saying they want me to come to the town. But most important is to give me the dates. I need the date so I can block you out so you don't wait to the last minute, because I do fill up quickly. But I can be reached at area code 215-989-9858, 215-989-9858. Email address is my name, UmarAbdullahJohnson@yahoo.com. You can get me on Facebook at Umar Abdullah Johnson, also Black Experts, BlackSpeakers.com. I don't know if you got any listeners from Florida on the line, but I'll be in Fort Lauderdale next weekend from Thursday until Sunday. There is a United Nations Human Rights Day conference that's being held by the Rastafarian Brothers and Sisters in Fort Lauderdale, and I'll be down there from Thursday until Sunday. I'll be in New York City, Brooklyn, Brownsville, the first weekend in Black History Month, Saturday, February the 5th. I'm going to be doing a free workshop for Black women entitled "For Sisters Only: Relationships and Dating, What Did Tyler Perry's Movies and Steve Harvey's Books Get Wrong?" It will be free. It will be at the Brooklyn Recreation Center on Mother Gaskin Avenue, and that's going to be on Saturday, February the 5th. Black women, mark your calendars. It won't cost you a penny to come on out and get that true information about Black male-female relationships. I'll be out in California, as I said, the last weekend of February. Got some other stuff planned, but a lot of that. I'll be in Baltimore the day after Christmas, the first day of Kwanzaa. I'll be speaking in Baltimore on the psychoacademic war against Black boys. That's going to be at the Samuel Coleridge Taylor Elementary School, 507 West Preston Street in Baltimore, Maryland.
Well, you know what? honestly, I didn't even go see that Tyler Perry movie because I felt like, I'll be honest, I felt like that he portrayed the men to be nothing. That's just me, you know, and that's just how I feel, you know, when I
he did the same thing for the women.
Yeah.
He portrayed the men and the women as being nothing. But when you study the psycho history of Tyler Perry, and again, I'm not attacking my brother because he came a long ways from being homeless. I just wish he would use his talents and his blessings in a constructive
way,
rather than
a
destructive fashion. Now, one thing you got to understand about successful Black people, that talented 10th, we have a talented 10th within our race, educated, rich, well-off, highly placed, successful Black people. But the only way you can get there and the only way you can stay there is to do one of two things. You ignore Black people like Obama and Oprah, or you throw negative images out about Black people like Tyler Perry and the rappers. That's the only two ways you can be comfortable with the white power structure and continue to live a comfortable life as an influential, educated, successful, or rich Black person. You are not allowed to be rich as a Black person in America unless you are going to use your money and your talent for the benefit of white people, okay, and to the detriment of Black people. You can't show me one rich, high-placed Black person who
who has used their money consistently, strategically, and effectively. I'm not talking about a couple donations, a couple grants. I'm not talking about that. But we're talking about people with millions and in some cases billions of dollars who do not use that money strategically to help their race. In fact, if you look at the Hurricane Katrina catastrophe and if you compare it to the tsunami catastrophe of Asia, you will see that if we go back to the tsunami, you have black athletes, football players, basketball players going on national television, giving their entire salary for the week or the month to tsunami. So they was willing to give their whole salary to Asians who probably don't give a damn about them. But when that same situation happened to black people, okay, down in New Orleans, they didn't get on television and donate weeks or months worth of their check because you are not allowed to be black and successful and help your own people. You either got to sneak and do it or you got to ignore them altogether or project negative, deplorable images about them. Look at the movies that these people make. Not just Tyler Perry, the Hughes brothers, John Singleton, Spike Lee with that Miracle at St. Anna's, okay, which was nothing but a damn sin on St. Anna's when he had four or five black men fighting over a prostitute white woman in the movie. One of the brothers was half retarded. This is what we do. We had Boys in the Hood, Menace to Society, Dead Presidents. Why in the hell haven't we seen a movie about the Marcus Garvey movement? Why haven't we seen a movie on the Haitian Revolution? Why haven't we seen a real movie on the transatlantic slave trade? I'm not talking about no roots that partly romanticized slavery as if it was something beneficial, but I'm talking about a real movie on the transatlantic slave trade. Why we ain't seen a movie on the Nat Turner insurrection? Now, I must say, out of respect, I ran into Ving Rhames. I ran into actor Ving Rhames at Nelson Mandela's prison cell in South Africa during Black History Month of 2009, and actor Ving Rhames, who's from New York, told me that he is working on a movie on the Nat Turner insurrection of 1831, August 21st, happens to be the same day I'm born on. But he was at Nelson Mandela's prison cell with his wife, who was a white woman. So we got to look at ourselves, and I'm not knocking Ving Rhames. Rosewood and a lot of his other movies are some of my favorites, but black men, you cannot be about the struggle and be married to a non-African woman. Part of your struggle is being loyal to your own women. And like I said, I'm not knocking the brother, but at the same time, it bothered me because he was one of my favorite actors, and to see him married to somebody who's not African and see them together at Nelson Mandela's prison cell in Robben Island, that did something for me. Again, I'm not criticizing a man. I might even have to work with him in the future. But we got to stop going outside our race. I don't give a damn who you are. There's no excuse, no justification for a black man not to marry a black woman. Only one out of every four black women gets married in this country. One out of four. With all the homosexuality, police brutality, mass incarceration, miseducation, psychotropic drugs, suicide, homicide, it is difficult for a black woman to find a man. And so it bothers me that the best thing an educated or rich black man could do is go and find a white woman who would not have married him if he was not rich or well-educated.
Wow, we got 22 minutes. Let's go ahead and keep this going. Gregory, you want to piggyback on that one?
He spoke the truth. We have to love our own. First chapter of my book is Love Thyself.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't appreciate that beautiful black skin you got and look at it every night or every morning or whatever y'all do, then it can be considered an issue. We have to get back to the grassroots of our relationships and everybody taking their rightful spot in that relationship, in that family atmosphere. The man being the man, the woman being the woman, the children being obedient. The kids can't run the house because the mama got the higher paying salary. The kids using the mama against the daddy and vice versa. So when we really want to be a family, if a sister really want to get married, what kind of brother is she looking for? 6 foot 2, 225 pounds of muscle? Because we got this certain idea in our mind what a good man is. A good man, and the first thing they say, he got to have money and he got to look a certain way. What qualifies that as a good man? So some of them are not married because of their own personal choices, because of the kind of men they're looking for.
That's
so
right.
If you want a good man, then you take in consideration what a good man is and what are your personal values and your morals and what are your standards. So if a good man
it's only a man that can lay down in the bed with you and make you feel a certain way, and you consider that to be a good man, and then that man goes around and makes four women feel that way he made you feel, then don't be mad because you chose that good man.
Yeah. And see, black men have to recognize that we are also partly responsible for the way that women treat us and the way that they go about their mate selections, because many of our sisters have either been stripped of their fathers or have been neglected emotionally by their fathers. And so when a woman is deprived of the love of her father, she seeks to compensate for that male energy by becoming so acceptable to other black men who will use and manipulate them sexually or financially. See, a low self-esteem sister, before I even have a conversation with her, if she has low self-esteem, I know it has something to do with her father. It's almost impossible for a woman to have low self-esteem if her emotional jug in childhood was totally filled up by her dad. For many of them, the emotional jugs in childhood are not filled up by their fathers for a lot of reasons. Sometimes they're taken away from by the system. Sometimes they're pushed out of their life by their mothers. And I have to say that to a lot of you women out there. You have to stop. And I'm only directing this at the women because women tend to be the custodial parents, but we do have a lot of fathers who are custodial parents, which means I'm also talking to those men. But you have to stop using your child as a weapon and a pawn against the father. It is not right to scar that child psychologically and emotionally for the rest of their life so you can get even. But working in the schools, I see all types of horror stories where daughters can't see their fathers, sons can't see their fathers, or sometimes the children can't see, you know, their mothers when the father has custody because they don't like them. And because they don't like them, they keep their children out of their life. Do you realize you're setting your daughter up for teenage pregnancy? Do you realize you're possibly setting your son up for homosexuality? Because when that black male is kept from getting that emotional energy that he needs from his father, his love jug, when his love jug ain't filled up, he goes looking for it as well. And sometimes that gets manipulated by an older man into a homosexual relationship. Other black boys who are deprived of their father's attention, they go looking for fathers in the street, so they emulate rappers and drug dealers, and so now they develop a hyper-masculine personality where their idea of manhood is based on how many people you can shoot, kill, how many blunts you can smoke, and how many women you can screw. So you see, you have a dichotomy of homosexuality to hyper-masculinity, and we don't want either one. We want a balance. But the only way you're going to get a balance is if the father is involved in the children's life. You got to be in their life. And I often say that black men have to make sure that they are serving as a mentor to another black man. I don't care if you got five sons. You have to be mentor to somebody else. And brother, I know how physically attractive our sisters look. They are God's greatest gift to the earth. They are the mother of all civilization. But you should not ever attempt to use a relationship with a boy to get between his mother's legs. And I see that happen sometimes where men like the woman, so they're going to act like they're going to be a big brother or a buddy to the young man, and then after they screw the woman, now they're out of the boy's life and the man's life. And what you are doing is teaching that young man to hate black manhood, which means you're teaching him to hate himself because he's looking at you as a model of what he's supposed to be. So we got to discipline ourselves to be mentors without trying to be sexual mates to the mothers. And yes, it can get difficult because when a single woman sees a man, even if he's in a relationship, she's still going to want that because that's her natural attraction, okay? And she has a emptiness that she needs to get filled up. We understand that, but we got to discipline ourselves. It's just like being an imam or a reverend. When you are a religious leader, half your flock is female, and they're going to look at you and idolize you, and they're going to want to come amongst you for the wrong reasons, and you got to discipline yourself to stay away from that. And that's why we see so many of our black religious leaders being caught up in all types of situations, whether it's Jesse Jackson having a child out of wedlock, whether it's Eddie Long molesting them boys, and that ain't even got no explanation. It's because when you claim to be a man of God, and I want to say this, and I'm not religious, but I say this because I'm a spiritualist. I don't need religion. But
I have to say that when you claim to be a man of God, when you claim to be about the counsel of the Lord, you have to recognize that you're going to be held to a higher standard in the universe. So that means not only are you going to get more help than other people in carrying out your mission, but it also means that you're going to get more temptation than other people carrying out your mission. So for all my brothers out there who aspire to be religious leaders, understand that you will be tempted by the flesh way more than I ever would, because whoever claims to be the most godly will have to fight the devil off more than anybody else.
Well, you spoke the truth on that one. You spoke the truth on that one. You definitely spoke it. But we got 15 minutes left. I'd like to thank y'all for coming on for this panel. I appreciate y'all. I got to have y'all on again. We definitely going to have to do this again, so we're going to try to get each other scheduled to try to make this happen for a part two, because there is more to be said than what has been said right now. So, fellas, thank you. I appreciate you. I love y'all for the work that y'all are doing, not only for yourselves, but for the community. Let's keep this up. And we got to get, actually, to tell you the truth, I actually want to do a panel worldwide hitting every state to talk about these issues. So let's try to make this happen, fellas.
All right, brothers, peace and one love.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Greg.
I'm just saying peace, brothers, and one love. And I'll catch y'all on the next one.
All right. Appreciate it.
All right, be safe, OT. Be strong, brother.
All right. I'll be calling you over this weekend, okay?
Okay,
Greg,
not a problem.
You too.
Yes, sir. Peace.
I appreciate y'all. Peace, y'all. Everybody, oh, man, this was a good show. This show today was the state of our young black men. And I am honored to have these men that I had on today to come on to the show and talk about the issues. Let's go ahead and take a caller. We got a caller, Echo 267-602. How you doing, caller? State your name. Where you calling from?
D-Cam from Philly. Quick plug in, check in, you know.
What's going on, man? Everybody, you know, this is the DJ from the OT show. This is the executive producer of OT show.
Yeah, man. Just calling in, you know, checking in on the young black men's situations and everything. Just told y'all I was going to call in as much as I could. You know, I'm in Philly at the album release party for some young black men doing it right. You know, the state of everything, justify the bad test. Good to see young black men doing good things. And everybody is, my understanding, is under the age of 21. There's a lot of young blacks here doing good, you know. Just to comment on, you know, some things, let y'all know that some people are really doing really good.
Mm-hmm. Well, yo, man, I appreciate you. Shout out to them. Definitely a big shout out to them, man. And they going to pop. Shout out to you that you there supporting them, too. Because you know
yeah,
you don't feel positive anyway. So, shout out to you, too.
Yeah, straight up for the OT show, baby. You know how
yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, all right, man. You know what I mean? I appreciate you. We're about to go off on the air. I love you, man. Shout out to them.
I love you, too, brother.
All right, man.
No doubt.
Now, everybody, this show right here that we had, The State of Our Young Black Men, we was addressing the issues. I'd like to thank my man Greg V. Arnold for coming on to the show. Y'all make sure y'all check his book out. I'm going to have it on a Facebook fan page. Help. Motivational book. What more can I say? We had my man Umar came on. Appreciate him. Y'all definitely check him out. Y'all can check him out on our website. Y'all can check him out on our fan page, facebook.com/OTShow. Y'all can check us out on www.otshowonline.com to get all the info of what's going on with OT, what's going on with Greg, what's going on with Umar. Everything is right there. If y'all forgot their website, you can go to our website, click on their pictures under guests on the show, and go straight to their website. All their contact information is right there, too. Once again, it's www.otshowonline.com. You can check out all the information that you want to hear about the previous shows or the show right here. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/OT Show. I thank everybody for coming. I thank all my listeners, all my 2237 listeners that was listening worldwide. I appreciate y'all. We got more to come. Next week on the OT Show, I am bringing an icon.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Oh. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.